From the top of Rockacorba, welcome to the GCN Show.
Welcome to the GCN Show.
Coming up this week, the one rider who can beat Tadej Pogačar up a climb, a 40-year-old lawyer wearing GCN kits. Yes, Andrew Feather versus Pog, the face-off we have all been waiting for, finally happened. And before we release the full video, we thought we would give you the full lowdown right here.
We've also got news from the gravel world, some miniature hot tech, fascinating research about the cycling revolution in Paris, and the new e-bike laws in the US that could be the future everywhere.
Also, I don't even notice, this is the 666th GCN show. So I don't know what's going to happen.
This is ominous.
It is.
Do you know what Feather's bib number was in his race against Pogačar?
He was 666, is he?
Yeah.
Beast.
This week in the world of cycling, we learnt that the UCI has no jurisdiction in Belgium, it would seem, after the US component brand SRAM won their case at the Belgium Competition Authority.
Yeah, I have no idea how a Belgian court can tell a Swiss-based international cycling federation what they can or can't do in a race in China. However, the upshot is SRAM won, and so their sponsored teams and riders will still be allowed to use their 10 teeth sprockets.
I'm sure they'll be very pleased.
I'm sure, yeah.
Ollie and Alex will dive in a little more in the tech show on Thursday.
Yeah, now we also learnt, sadly, that Daniel Lloyd is not a gravel world champion after he headed to Limburg this weekend to take on the world championships. He did, however, finish, and we think he might be the first rider to finish off 2 hours a week of training.
A world champion of sorts, then?
Yes, and always a world champion in our eyes, yes. Thanks as well to all of you who joined him on his WIF training sessions and made him do at least some training in the lead-up to the race.
We also learned that today Pogačar rounded out his season in style, winning Il Lombardia for the fifth time in a row.
Yeah, so doing so makes him the first rider to win 5 Lombardies, the first rider to win any monument 5 times in a row. He joins Eddy Merckx as the only riders to win 3 monuments and the World Championships in a single season. But he is now the first rider who has podiumed in all 5 monuments and the World Championships. In a single year.
Yes, that stat is wild. Yeah. Absolutely wild. However, the very next day, he lined up at the Podgy Challenge, a charity hill climb race in Slovenia, and amongst the 1,200 entries was none other than Andrew Feather.
Yeah. We will have a video on this coming very soon. It's the race we've all been waiting for, frankly, isn't it? We can't not give you a little bit of news about it now, though. So this face-off was, in essence, the world's best cyclist, potentially best ever, versus the world's best climber, in inverted commas, who's not a professional cyclist and is a lawyer.
Yeah, you all know Andrew Feather by now from his cameos on GCN videos, where we try and find elaborate ways to beat him, and yet he keeps kicking our asses. I mean, it's just unbelievable at this stage.
Yeah.
Except for the one occasion, actually, where we raced him on a flat road. And we won.
I won.
We won. Take it as a team, Si. If you win as a team, lose as a team.
I mean, yeah. All right, I won, but still. Now, the question is, how did he come to be racing Tadej Pogačar instead of us chumps? Or at the very least, the best hill climbers in the UK, which he does most weekends. So the simple answer is, Pogačar's people were hosting an event, the aforementioned Podgy Challenge, and it is a mass start hill climb on a mountain in Slovenia, which he has trained on for many, many years.
It's called Kravac. It's a 13-kilometre long and climbs 1,000 metres to a ski resort. The idea behind this challenge was that it was open to all riders, and Pogačar would give everyone a head start and then race to catch up.
Yeah, so 1,200 people took to the start line, one of them being Andrew Feather, who had applied to take part in this event back in the spring.
I don't think they knew much about Andrew Feather.
I don't think they did, no. So, as I said, full video coming soon, where not only will we see the Podgy Challenge, but also when Feather went with Ollie to a laboratory in Exeter University here in the UK to see just how he measures up physiologically.
I can't wait to see it, to be honest. All of it. It's going to be amazing. The results from the lab are bonkers enough.
Yes, they are. Ollie spoke at length about them. He hijacked our morning meeting, didn't he, the day after?
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, he hasn't stopped talking about those results.
He hasn't, no. Now, back to the race, though. Pogačar as you said, gave everyone a head start. It was 7 minutes.
7 minutes.
Seven minutes. And he overtook 1,199 people. But one escaped, Andrew Feather.
How do you think Picaccia felt about that? He's won everything this year, except for Paris-Roubaix and the Poggi Challenge.
Yeah. I mean, Eddie Merckx didn't win the Poggi Challenge either, did he, to be fair? Hopefully, Tadej can see the funny side of not winning his own race. Otherwise, it's quite likely that we may never be allowed anywhere near him, his bikes, his team, possibly even Slovenia ever again.
We won't go into too many details from the race. We'll save it for the video, but Feather averaged 400 watts for 38 minutes. What is mind-blowing, though, is that while Pogacar didn't catch him, he did still go 3 minutes faster than Feather.
Yeah. Which 3 minutes quicker, yeah. up a 40-minute climb. Now, we know just how good Pogacar is, and we've just read you a bunch of stats at the start of the show, but even so, we also know that Andrew Feather is a bit of a beast. So it kind of does put it into perspective, doesn't it?
Yeah, it
just
does.
Just how... Well, I mean, we don't need to Andrew Feather as a benchmark for Pogacar, but do you know what I mean? Like, I think we're all quite shocked at the gap there.
Yeah. Ollie will do the maths for us, but Pog must have been pushing high 6 watts a kilo for that effort the day after Lombardia at the end of a long, long season.
I was trying to put it in some kind of context about, like, all right, if this was a stage in a race, like, I don't know, Volta Catalunya, you know, like a week-long stage race, and Feather was racing it, to finish 3 minutes down in a 40-minute time trial. Actually, there was a stage in the Tour de France this year, wasn't there? Up a TT, up a climb, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Bear with us, viewers. Well, after a quick bit of research that we should have done earlier, yeah. Actually, on that stage of the Tour de France, which was stage 13... Unlucky for some, but not the beast. Actually, Feather would, on paper, quick bit of time trialers logic, finished roughly fourth. I mean, clearly he hadn't raced any other of the Tour de France, nor had he done Il Lombardia, but even so...
For a one-off effort, that's pretty impressive.
It is pretty impressive.
It's really impressive. I mean, I feel a bit better about all the times he's beaten us now.
Yeah. Basically, it's a little bit like having a cross between Primoz Roglic and Florian Lipovic in our own backyard, who also happens to be a full-time lawyer.
Yeah, and can't sit in a saddle.
No. I mean, it makes you wonder, like, whether or not a super talented person like an Andrew Feather could have been a professional sports person, professional cyclist, or whether or not you can't even have that conversation because he is not a professional sports person and therefore he couldn't have been. Do you know what I mean? There's that thing, isn't there, about, like, well, you know, if you've got the potential to do it but you don't actually end up doing it, then did you ever have the potential in the first place? Because something else was lacking, like your, I don't know, commitment or your, like, enthusiasm for the sport or, you know, all those other factors that come into it.
There's a lot that can go wrong, I think, in professional cycling. And I think there's a lot of people that could potentially make it to the very top. But bad luck, life gets in the way. And I think not everyone does rise to that level. I have a massive amount of respect for anyone who does. And I think a one-off effort is super impressive. I think all of Feather's performances are incredibly impressive. But at the same time, looking at what the likes of Pogacar does and what anyone who's out there on the pro circuit does day in, day out, It's like a different sport in a way.
Yeah.
So, like you say, I think it's quite hard to say one way or the other. It's almost like we shouldn't.
No.
We should just, like, take both performances for what they are.
Great pub chat, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not going to stop us debating this. Get involved in the comment section down below. That gap, has it surprised you? Either was Pogacar not as fast as you thought he would be, or is Feather quicker than you thought he would be? And then, yeah, bit of idle chit-chat. What do you think? Like, could he have made it?
And now it's time for Cycling Shorts.
Cycling Shorts now, and we're going to start with the news from the Gravel World Championships that Daniel Lloyd, as we said, did not win. The women's race was an absolute corker, wasn't it? So the home riders were out in force, but it was almost a case of too many cooks spoiling the broth. Shirin van Anroy's late solo effort was reeled back in by one of her own teammates.
She was quite upset, as you would be, but Dutch embarrassment was averted as Lorena Wiebes took the sprint just ahead of last year's winner Marianne Vos and Italian rider Silvio Persico in third.
Yeah, in the men's race, it was Florian Vermeersch who took home the title, riding away solo with about 18k to go. The Belgian rider celebrated while pointing to his left femur, which actually broke in a crash at the Vuelta Murcia back in 2024. So that's quite a deserved victory, isn't it, that, after a long road back for... he's still a young rider, isn't he? Do you remember he podiumed back in Paris-Roubaix in 2021?
Yeah, big result, that. Yeah. No male elite US riders made the trip and neither big hitters in the women's, which is a shame, really. But apparently Euro gravel isn't worth it.
No, I haven't actually read any... explicit comments about how it was the World Bike Path Championships this year, but I'm expecting them.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Each their own. Right, a bit of tech news now. Here is a new bike that I didn't know I needed until I saw it. It is a Paschley Skyline, which is a mini velo. Have a look at that.
That's what all my bikes look like.
I mean, a little bit, yes. I'll be honest, I don't really see the point of a mini velo, in that it's not an actual space saver like a folding bike, but with 20-inch wheels, it's clearly going to be a little bit more compact. Plus, I'm told they are super nippy and agile. And this one, made by Paschley, is handmade in the UK. So there you go.
You don't have to get the knobbly tired version. There's a gravel and road bike too.
There you go. Yeah. Now, while we're on urban cycling, kind of, here is a cool new study published in the journal Cycling and Micromobility Research.
What's that? What? That actually sounds like a journal we genuinely might like.
Yeah, it does. It's a real thing, that journal. And it's definitely one of my favourites, Connor. The study looks into the rise of cycling in Paris over a five-year period, so from 2018 to 2023. There was an increase in that period of 240%, no less, but it focuses instead on how that increase has come about.
It's really cool, actually. They have drilled into all the factors that influence uptake of bikes using dependence-aware sensitivity analysis techniques.
Well, that sounds interesting. Can you explain?
I don't know what that means. You're right.
I couldn't work it out either. I didn't have too much time to invest in deciphering this scientific research. But
dependence-aware sensitivity analysis techniques.
Yeah. Basically, instead of just looking objectively at all these things going, like, I reckon that's the most important, there was actually a scientific way to find out what the most important factor was in getting more people on bikes.
So you mean they're sensitive to being aware of the dependence of analysis techniques?
Pretty much, yeah. You nailed it.
Anyway, number one will probably not come as a surprise.
Let me guess. Improved cycling infrastructure.
Kind of, yeah. Yes. Length of bike paths first. Number of public hire bike docking stations second. Secure bike racks third. And then fuel price comes in at fourth.
Fuel price in fourth. There we go. But yeah, length of bike paths. If you want to get more people on bikes, build more bike paths. I mean, we know that to be true. But there we go, some scientific research to prove it. Now, elsewhere in the world of cycling advocacy, battles, frankly, are being fought when it comes to e-bikes and e-motorbikes, the danger caused by the latter at the expense of the former.
Yeah, depending on where you are in the world, you might be witnessing different things on the streets, but basically, illegal electric motorbikes being confused or mixed with e-bikes is causing real problems.
Yeah, now, fortunately, a new law is being introduced in Connecticut this autumn.
Technically, if it's in Connecticut, it'll be this fall.
Fall. True.
Yeah.
Kudos for picking up on that, Connor. Now, we won't go into detail in it, but in essence, the new law makes a clear distinction between an e-bike and an electric motorbike. The latter, which in Connecticut, will now require a driver's license if it's over 750 watts. And then the really big full-power e-motorbikes are going to be treated, as they should, as full motorbikes.
It's legislation that we desperately need in a lot of places, to be honest. And I really hope it kind of catches on.
I do too, yeah. You know? Those are discussions that need to be had in the halls of power, basically everywhere, don't they? Right, now, a bit of mountain bike news now. Bear with us. The cross-country World Cup Series wrapped at the weekend in Mount St Anne in Quebec. Thought you'd be interested, because there's quite a few firsts there. So Sammy Maxwell became the first ever New Zealand rider to win an overall title in the women's competition, although she lost out on the day to the Canyon rider Jenny Risford, who won with the biggest margin of victory in the modern era, a quite bonkers 3 minutes and 30 seconds.
Wow.
In a sport that's normally decided by seconds, that's unheard of.
Yeah, and in the men's, US rider Chris Blevins became the first US male rider to win the overall for 34 years. The rider to do that, last pop quiz, John Tomac, of course.
John Tomac. I remember when Tomac did that, would you believe?
Did I say his name wrong?
You did, yeah.
It's Tomac.
Tomac.
That's what I said.
You said Tomac.
Tomac.
So it's Tomac. And in the men's, US rider Chris Blevins became the first US male rider to win the overall for 34 years. The rider to last do that... Oh, I'm sweating.
After that little pronunciation debacle, UK rider Charlie Aldridge took his first World Cup win as well. So congratulations to him.
Yeah, if you are into your mountain bike racing, GMBN have a great video from the weekend where they look at the evolution of racing.
They do indeed, yeah. Now, if you're wondering why you should care about mountain biking, I mean, maybe you shouldn't. That's absolutely fine. But there is quite a nuanced line between gravel and dirt, as showcased very well by Swedish bike tinkerer extraordinaire Dangerholm, aka Gustav Gullholm.
Yeah, he has created two utterly bonkers gravel bikes based on Scott Spark and Scott Scale mountain bikes.
Yeah, have a look at that. An aero Scott Scale mountain bike with drop bars. Vomit inducing, or is it the future?
I think this is really cool, actually. I like it.
I mean, like, it's fine, as in, if people want to ride that stuff, that's okay. It's not for me.
Nah,
I don't understand why drop handlebars are so much better than flat handlebars. Just put flat handlebars on and have more fun.
It's like a Tron bike in real life.
Yeah, I know, but like, it just only wants to go in a straight line. Anyway, let's not go down here again.
Anyway, we'll finish Cycling Shorts with a little update on our Zwift Racing League teams.
Yes, now you will remember that we gave you the opportunity to race for Team GCN this season on ZRL. And we have been loving following everyone's progress, haven't we?
Yeah, the five teams, Alex's are currently leading the way in their league and are, according to team coordinator Hugh, on the verge of pulling off a season-defining upset as a result of them being a mix of not just Cat B, but also Cat C racers.
Yeah, so competing in the big leagues with a mix, that's very cool, isn't it? My team, meanwhile, are also leading their league. Well done, lads. Despite having a rider promoted out of the category, because they were doing so well, yeah. They have rallied round, though, and are still absolutely crushing it, and are, according to Hugh, wait for it, the epitome of what a dedicated and well-run squad should be.
Are you going to try and take credit for that?
Yeah.
You are?
No, I would. Don't get me wrong, I really would, but I actually can't. They do a phenomenal job. They're more on it than a World Tour team. I don't think they've got an aerodynamicist on board, but they basically, like, no stone is left unturned with my Zwift team. Yeah, honestly, I think the guys are doing a fantastic job. How are your team?
Yeah, they're doing a great job. Really getting stuck into it. There's a mix of new and returning riders. Also, props go to Ollie's team as well. They didn't take the team win last week, but one of his riders, Jennifer, took the individual win, and in a move straight out of Dan's playbook, she cracked open a bottle of champagne.
Fair play. Yeah. It's been a long while since I was able to do that after a bike race.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Well,
those were the days.
Yeah. Congrats, Jennifer. Before we move on, actually, one reason you might be able to crack open some champagne without winning a bike race, we've got a competition for you, haven't we, Connor?
Yeah, that's right. Now, this is running until the 24th of October, and it's your chance to win a Hover Air Pro Max X1 drone. Full package as well, so you get this, like, this cool controller, so you can kind of keep an eye on where the drone is as you're riding.
Nice. Yeah. The main thing about this Hover Air Pro Max is that it's a self-following drone. It's bonkers, isn't it, right? So it basically... you put it on the palm of your hand, it looks at you lovingly, like a pet, and then it flies off, and depending on what you tell it to do on an app, it will go and do exactly that. So it will happily follow you as you cycle, up to about 40k an hour, but then it can do all sorts of other stuff as well. We took one to Denmark, Ollie and I, the other day. It was incredible, the stuff it was shooting for.
It's insane, and it also folds away really neatly, so it fits in your cycling pocket. It's so light as well. So.
It's proper cool. The only slight problem with this competition for some of you is that it's only open to residents of the UK and Europe. So, apologies for those of you that can't enter. For those of you that can... I mean, you've basically got twice the chance of winning now. So make sure you get involved. As Connor said, the competition is open until the 24th of October.
Right then, it is time for hack / Bodge, where you guys send us in your brilliant photos, cycling related, of course, and we decide whether what is pictured in the photo is a hack or a bodge. Quite a long-winded explanation of that.
Yeah, in a nutshell. If you want to get involved, then you can obviously send them in to the GCN uploader. The address is in the description beneath this video. We're going to start off with Professor Pistone and their mudguard mount. So bear with that, actually, because this is pretty blooming cool. I built a single-speed commuter bike from used parts bought online. I have some nice mudguards in my own parts bin, but there's no mounting point in the bottom bracket chains area. So, taking inspiration from front derailleur mounts, I designed and 3D printed a mudguard mount. And I've got to say, that is super neat.
It looks tidy.
It looks really tidy.
Yeah, it's a brilliant solution. There's no kind of like extra stuff there that would get annoying. Looks solid as well.
That's a hack.
That's a great hack.
100% that's a hack. Yeah, fantastic. Thank you very much for sending that one in. Connor, what's next?
Yeah, Robert Davies sent this one in. It's a Garmin mount bodge.
He's already said it's a bodge. Oh, yeah.
I haven't even read the description. I'm looking at the photo and I'm thinking this is bodge straight away. I'm sorry, Robert. I forgot my Garmin mount for a bike I keep in a remote part of Italy. There are no shops, so I improvised with a plumber's tape reel and some old twine, and it works well.
It did not work well, Robert. It did absolutely not. So for those of you that are listening to the GCN show on as a podcast, so here we have a Garmin sat on top of a white reel, like, you know, the kind of thing that you wind twine or cotton around. And then it appears that the twine that was around the reel is now holding the reel on to the handlebars and stem. Which, I mean, if that was literally the only thing available, then fine. But I can think of like a million different things that might be more suitable for attaching a head unit to a bike. I mean, at the very least, just some electrical tape. Just tape it on.
Yeah.
Just tape it to your stem. What's with the reel?
That's what I'm not getting. I don't know why the reel needs to be involved.
I mean, that is a bit of a disgrace, isn't it?
Is it maybe that it's like fitting nicely in the reel and it's jammed in there?
I don't know. Bodge, I'm sorry.
I think it's a
Robert,
bodge.
That's an absolute bodge.
I mean, Robert agrees with us. He called it a bodge to begin with.
Well, he does. Right, this next one, I'm going to reserve judgment to begin with, sent in by Peter E. It's called an automatic tubeless tyre rotator. So, Peter said, I recently fitted some new tyres for a 48-mile gravel ride to raise funds for cancer research. Excellent, we applaud. I fitted them late at night, felt pretty pleased with myself until I came out the next morning and found the front tyre had leaked air through the sidewall. Now, normally, I would go for a long 3 to 4 hour ride to help the sealant settle in, but with the ride the next day, time wasn't on my side, so I improvised. Armed with painter's tape and curiosity, I began experimenting. A few strips here, a few strips there, until I'd built the perfect set of air blades around the rim. I then positioned a fan underneath, and voila, my DIY wind tunnel was born. The wheel started to turn slowly, majestically, like some kind of homegrown science project. I left it spinning overnight, and by morning the tyre was sealed, solid, and ready to roll. I mean, what do you say to that, Connor?
I mean, great idea. I'd be nervous leaving a wheel running all night.
A fan running?
The wheel and the fan.
I mean, the wheel I don't have a problem with, but just like... It's very elaborate.
I don't know what's wrong with just topping up the air halfway through the ride. It's a great idea.
It is a great idea. I mean, utterly, utterly pointless, but a great idea, nevertheless.
I love it. I mean, I'm going to give it a hack just because it's worked, and I love the ingenuity.
Yeah. I don't think you need to do a three-hour ride to bed a tubeless tyre in.
Well, that's what I was thinking.
Just give it like a spin around the block.
A little, yeah. Or anyway. Just a top up of air up in the ride, maybe.
Anyway, I like it. It's full points for your write-up as well, Peter. So I think that's great. We've even got a video, look. Is that on YouTube? No. I was going to say, I thought you'd uploaded a video to YouTube. Here we go.
Let's see how fast the wheel's going. I'll let you play it.
Oh, wow. What's messing with my head, Connor, is that the wheel is turning backwards.
Yeah.
What happens if when you go forwards, Peter, all of your hard work is undone and it becomes unsealed? You've got to think about these things.
That's what I imagine, like the perfect bike garage having, so your tubeless sealant always stays like perfect. It's like those wheels are always spinning.
Nice one. All right, what's the last one this week, Connor?
So this has been sent in by Matt Ellis, a dog poo bag fix. So okay. Out on a regular Monday night gravel ride with my club, NTR, I had to stop due to noise from the rear of the bike. So there was a clip holding the rear brake cable to the frame that had detached, and a few of us desperately searched spares and saddlebags for something like a cable tie, gaffer tape, but to no avail. Step up, Mark. Well, I have a dog poo bag, which I then tied the cable against the frame, finished the ride, and it got me home, where I then swapped it for a cable tie.
Oh, jeez. It's got out of the frying pan into the fire. You've replaced a dog poo bag with a cable tie. I'm not sure which is worse. Both are shit. I mean, I hate to say it, Connor, but if this solution solved a problem out on the road or trail, technically it's a roadside hack.
Yeah.
I mean, we are having to give a dog poo bag the status of a hack.
I wouldn't be able to get away with this. My feet would be getting stuck in it all the time. But you're right. I mean, it's worked. It's done the job. Surely it made an annoying noise for the whole ride, though. Like, that flapping in the wind would have been so annoying.
Are you trying to look for a reason to say
I'm trying to look for a... We can't give a hack to a dog poo bag, so...
This will be the end of us. All right, it's a bodge.
I mean...
There must have been something better than a dog poo bag, surely. But fair play to Mark. I know what it feels like to have a dog poo bag in every pocket of every outfit. Just happens.
Yeah, mine are nappy bags. I've got them everywhere. No dog poo bags, lots of nappies.
There we go. Right, that was a good batch of hack forward slash bodges this week. As we said at the start, keep them coming in. You can send them to the uploader. It's time now for caption competition, that part of the show where you get a chance to get your hands on a coveted GCN Camelback water bottle. All you got to do is put a witty caption in the comment section down below that relates to a photo we will give you in just 1 second. After the results from last week, Connor?
Yep, so this was at the Sparks and Munster and Giro on the podium. Big beer being
big
drunk
beer.
There. Yeah, and Floby222, I think you've won this one, so we've got a bottle on the way to you with this caption, top off the leaderboard. But the winners don't seem to be excited about those liquid carbs or recovery drink.
Top of the leaderboard.
Yeah.
Nice.
We got it.
How many litres do you reckon that is? Three?
I'd say that's three, yeah.
That's a big... That's called a big pint. It's clearly not a pint, because it's like six of them. But anyway, there we go. Fair play. Right, Connor, what's the photo this week? Tadej Pogačar on the podium.
Yep.
Near miss with a champagne cork.
It's like a bit of trouble there. It's not quite gone right for him, has it?
He needs more practice. That's what he needs.
Yeah, they're tricky. I had a teammate who actually sent himself to hospital on the podium, opened a champagne bottle. He went straight in his eye.
No, wait. It happened to Biniam Girmay as well, didn't it? Do you remember the Giro? He won the first stage of the Giro and then had to pull out.
Yeah, so I've always been very careful with champagne bottles, pointing them away from people.
Well, that honestly, that's the real reason why I never didn't really win any. I was just too nervous. If I was ever in that position, just... back off slightly, because, dangerous.
Anyway, I'll kick us off for the caption for this one. I'm going to go with, when you win Lombardia, but hear Andrew Feather is en route to your bike race the next day. I ruined the moment for him, didn't it?
Amazing.
Anyway.
That is cool. All right, good work, Connor. If you think you can beat that, then put your witty caption in the comments section down below, and we will pick a winner next week. Okay, let's get on some comments now, shall we? We spend a lot of our time reading and replying to comments under videos. And to be honest with you, it's one of the highlights of the day, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, always love hearing from you all. And we'll start with the GCN show. Pardon me. Had quite a lot of comments, actually.
We did. 2,300, to be exact, on the bizarre case of Strava trying to sue Garmin for something. A lot of strength of feeling. Dankerman said whoever at Strava thought suing Garmin was a good idea will be out of a job quite quickly. The backlash is going to be brutal as we all dump Strava, as we all cancel our subscriptions. But not everyone thought that, did they?
No, there was some people on the other side. So Jorge Tomeo 5780 said, I started using Strava many years ago. It's always been what I wanted. No excessive amount of data and equipment to record a lifetime of cycling, and I hope they survive this stupidity.
Yeah, I did have a chuckle at Darren Mansell, who said, with the Strava thing, how will I ever get along without athlete intelligence telling me, good ride around Dodford when you weren't feeling your best, keeping your effort in range, after I name my activity, ride around Dodford, not feeling great. I think we all have a bit of experience with athlete intelligence, summarising our rides.
Yeah.
But anyway, nevertheless, I've got another one I suddenly remembered. That made me chuckle, and I screenshotted it and sent it to Dan. So we discussed briefly how Dan Strava's his dog walks, basically. There's a man who's going to have a dog poo bag. Bollocks, where is it? Sorry. Can we have some of that lift music back again? Here we go. So this was sent in by Big Island Boy. There is nothing, block capitals, more annoying, capitals, on Strava than when you follow one of your mates or a famous athlete or a presenter and get their moronic daily dog walks in your feed. Hey, dimwits, do you not know how to change your Strava settings so that every time you take a crap, it doesn't show up on Strava? Simply change your settings so that all of your activities are private, then only make public the ones that people actually will give a crap about. Longer training rides, races, etc. If not, you're just being a jerk off and a narcissist. Oh, I love it. Like I said, I sent that straight to Dan. He liked it as well. You appreciate it. And he hasn't uploaded a doc walk since. that made me chuckle, that did. Right, anyway, yes, so a lot of that wasn't there under the show last week. A lot of good comments under the bike log video. You pulled out some interesting ones.
Yep, so Hosho Legacy sent this one in. So part of my job is removing abandoned and illegally parked bikes from our city. We bring angle grinders. In my experience, the most awkward ones to remove and therefore perhaps the least likely to be stolen are ones where the lock is small in a tight spot. It can be difficult to get a grinder in between the seats in a down tube, for example, especially if the disc is half worn down. A bike thief does not want to grind through your frame and your rims because that kind of damage makes the bike much more difficult to resell. As for us, we legally can't damage a bike in case you want to come and collect from it at the depot, and we'll give you 3 miles to do that before you scrap the bike.
There you go. That's super interesting, isn't it? Valuable insight. Slightly sobering there. This one's from Hammett. A friend of mine once left his bike locked outside the Guildhall in the middle of Cambridge City here in the UK. He then lost the keys to his D-lock. He came back the next day with an angle grinder to get his bike. He had the receipt for the bike with him. It was right under CCTV cameras. The town was packed. No one said a word. Sparks everywhere. And then off he went on his bike. Yeah, okay. And then I screenshot another couple just that I'd completely forgotten about. Yuxian 20, I put thermite in the seat tube and have it set to detonate whenever it hears loud noises. I've lost 4 bikes and 3 sets of Lycra shorts to construction zones. I'll figure it out one of these days. And then Red Sandercan said, I live in Naples, Italy, where they would steal your grandmother if she wasn't tied down. Now, that I thought was very interesting because it implies that you have to tie your grandmother down so she doesn't get stolen. So anyway, I think something might have got lost in translation there.
Yeah.
But I hope that you're not tying your grandmother down if you live in Naples.
I think I like good luck to anyone who tries to steal a grandmother. Good luck to you.
True that. True.
There was loads of comments under the video where we put weight on Andrew Feather trying to make him weigh the same as some of the superhumans out there. I've got to say, it was really impressive actually seeing him do this on the day. I genuinely didn't think he was going to get a meter on his bike, let alone up the whole thing.
Do you know what wasn't impressive about that video?
What's that?
You and Alex.
I couldn't ride a bike.
Full disclosure, I would have been there, but I wasn't very well that day, so I had to pull a sickie. But I can't really say anything, but you certainly didn't look like you were.
It was hard. My legs didn't find it hard. It was my core and my back, and I just couldn't. Literally, that's climbing it steep.
Oh, brilliant. Anyway, some great comments. Yokaris, Andrew Feather might be one of the most amenable sports people ever. Never dodges the PR, always puts up with GCN nonsense. Absolutely brilliant. And a lot of people as well talking about how they were really glad to see how crap we were, basically. When riding at a heavier weight. Jolly Giant said, finally some content to show what normal 2 metre tall, 100 kilo riders have to deal with when climbing. Yeah. Oh, and someone called him Andrew Stone now, which I liked.
Yeah, I thought that was cool as well. I do, I mean, going back to that first comment, I do have a lot of respect for Andrew. He turns up, we tell him what he's going to do, and it's just, yeah, let's give it a go.
Amazing, yeah. And then lastly, this is a lot of comments this week, but it's been a good one, underneath the hill climb battle between you and Ollie and Dan.
Yeah, some brilliant comments under this one. Houdini said, does a hill climb with a bike light and empty who does a hill climb with a bike light and empty bottle cages? Come on, GCN, get into the true spirit of hill climb.
I mean, you're lucky that Connor took his handlebar bag off and mudguards.
I'm saving it. I'm going to go the full hog. We've got another one coming very soon.
The big one, yeah. And then Matthew Simon, thank you for this. I hope Si's okay and that the gymnastics is not a ruse to hide him having a tough time with something. So now I can assure you that's not what gymnastics is about.
A few more gymnastics comments as well. Rich Crompton said, great video, fantastic camaraderie. When is Si's star jumping forward roll video coming out though?
I mean, I'm pretty much nailed the forward rolls now. It's the cartwheels that I'm struggling with a little bit at the minute. You know those ones where you feel like you're doing a really good job and then someone shows a video of you and you're like, oh that's not quite what I had in my mind.
Gymnastics was not my strong point. No. Never has been my strong point.
No.
There was also a really thoughtful comment from Declan Gaming, who said, I love the banter between all the presenters. I know they're tongue-in-cheek when we're having a thing at Cyber. Please add in something about the importance of a dad being at their children's event, which I agree is very, very important. We're finally overcoming the generation of fathers having little involvement. I think it's important to praise Cy being part of his kids' lives.
Thank you, Declan.
It's the next comment that is a really, is a beautiful comment. I totally agree with you, Declan. It's the next comment which just made me chuckle so much when I read it. It's not his kids, he's doing gymnastics for himself.
What's so funny about that, Connor? We can all start a new sport or hobby in our 40s.
Just picture kids with cartwheels.
Yeah, I'm afraid X-Trails, so I'm not doing gymnastics for me.
Brilliant.
But there we go. Right, just quickly, because we've been rabbiting on a little bit. Three videos for you on GCN this week that you need to check out. Connor is doing the four hardest training sessions on Ruvi. How's it going, mate?
I've done two down. They're pretty tough. I've got a brutal one coming up tomorrow.
Which one is it?
So it's one that you're not able to... You're doing well if you can complete it, basically. So we'll see how well I'm doing. But yeah, there's a lot of just... It's that high-intensity stuff that just...
Yeah, well, do some good training. Then we talked about it earlier on this one. Feather versus Poggy. All been well. We'll have that ready for you by the weekend. And then something a little bit different. I have got hold of a four-wheeled cargo bike and I'm wondering whether it's the future of urban mobility. Do you know what it's called?
I actually don't know what the name of it is.
VOCU.
VOCU. Is that the name?
So yeah, check it out. Stay tuned on Sunday.
Right, fuck you.
Yeah. All right. That didn't need bleeping, by the way. Just to be clear,
vok.
Yeah. There you go. All right. Thank you so much for watching, everyone. We will see you next week.